In 2017, Tamaya Jones and her family left their home in Flint, Michigan, and moved across the country to Utah, to Bountiful. Tamaya is African-American, and she left a mostly African-American community and came to a city that's 94% white. So you can imagine, it was a culture shock.
I grew up in a Baptist church. The older women, they would call it catching the Holy Ghost, and they would just go crazy. Here we go to an LDS church. Everyone is just, like, so quiet. It's, like, awkward when people get up there and, like, get their speeches and no one's clapping. I'm like, how do you know if you did good or not? Like, no one is clapping. It was just really, really different.
Tamaya was 15 when she walked into her first class at Bountiful High, day one, and it didn't take long for the questions and the comments to come about her race.
I'm the only black person in this class. Even sitting in the back of the class, like, I felt like the attention was still on me. Asking me where I'm from, and they expected me to say, like, an African country or something, like, oh, I'm from Michigan. And then they go in and say, like, oh, well, what's your, like, genealogy? Like, I don't know. Like, I'm from Michigan. That's all you need to know. Like, pointing out, like, the black students, like, when you're talking about, like, a black subject, they're like, oh, you must know this because you're black. Like, no, I didn't know that, but you didn't have to point that out. They would do that a lot. It makes you feel isolated.
Late last month, it was revealed that the Department of Justice had conducted an exhaustive investigation into reports of racism in Davis County schools. We're talking site visits, multiple interviews of principals and guidance counselors, teachers. There were focus groups with students and parents. And the investigation found the district had knowledge, had written documentation of at least 212 incidents where black students were called the N-word. This played out in at least 27 schools. And that apparently didn't include some of the other stories of race-based harassment. Tamaya made her own complaint.
A kid was wearing, like, a Confederate flag hoodie. I went to admin and told them, like, how this was offensive. And they're like, oh, well, that's the same as you, like, wearing an Obama shirt. I can't tell them to take it off because it infringes on their First Amendment rights. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Tamaya Jones, she graduated from Bountiful High School last year. She's studying to be a nurse, and she's seen the report. But she told us it was nothing new to her, and she doesn't think it'll change much.
They'll just say, oh, we are doing these things. It'd be nice to see changes, but, like, realistically, nothing will probably get done.
Why?
It's just, like, what's expected, I guess.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're going to talk about this story developing in Davis County, and we're going to begin with Marjorie Cortez of the Deseret News. She's been covering the story, and we asked her to take us through those earliest days.
I'm told Utah has a very high rate of white parents who would adopt children of color. And there were parents who have black children who were having bad experiences at school. And they were going to administrators and teachers and making complaints and wanting to work through how their kids were being treated. And they just didn't feel like they were making any headway. And so they reached out to organizations like Utah Black Roundtable and Black Lives Matter for for lack of a better term, technical assistance. Just what do we do now? Where do we take this when our cries aren't being heard? And so I know there were some leaders that recommended this would be a good course to take, because a lot of these things were sounding like constitutional violations, equal protection violations.
So these groups, these parents, asked some of these other groups for advice, and that's when someone approaches the Department of Justice. They released their findings late last month. And what was the scope of their investigation? Give us a sense of what it was they did and were looking for.
Hundreds and hundreds of interviews of families, of students, of school employees, administrators, community members, just trying to get a bead on what was going on. You know, what were these complaints going nowhere? Were they poorly handled? Were kids of color treated differently than other kids? And I think one of the sad things that it revealed was that so many of the students they interviewed, they just had come to believe, because this hadn't stopped or nothing had changed, that that was just the way it was, that they just had to deal with that condition.
What was the legal finding? Because it seems that what they found, I mean, they go through these, as you've reported, they go through these reports handed over by the district, some more than 200 incidents. And they found that the kind of indifference or negligence or lack of doing anything at all, deliberate and systemic, that was the finding.
Right. And some of these events were student on student speech, students making racist comments to other students, students touching kids' hair. And then some of them were staff to students.
The grown-ups, in other words.
Right. And I think that was particularly troublesome, because when adults were doing this and there were no consequences, then it kind of sent a message to the kids that whatever they did wouldn't be taken into account either. I mean, on the perpetrator side.
You know, there were these reports of really nasty insensitivity and just basic ignorance. But maybe we should say, Marjorie, that that wasn't all that was going on here. I mean, there in the reports itself, they were Black students routinely were called the N-word and other racial epithets, that they were called by other students monkeys and apes. Their skin was described as dirty. They were taunted, described as being references to slaves and lynching. Go pick cotton is a reference. You are my slave. So this wasn't just passive racism. It was quite just aggressively hateful, we should say.
I think that's accurate. It is kind of dumbfounding to me how another adult, who's an educator, no less, doesn't stop that in its tracks if they become aware of it.
Yeah. The deliberate indifference, that did seem to be an element of the report that was quite clear, that this wasn't just negligent behavior, that there was a deliberate indifference. What do you think that means?
I think it means that no one took this seriously. No one advocated for these kids, when clearly this conduct was wrong, or this speech was abhorrent. Consequences should have been dealt. You know, I think, too, that there's times for teaching moments. You know, I interviewed with this one mom of a white mom who adopted a Black child, and she talked about that growing up in Weber County and just really not having a clue about any of this until she went to college in Texas, and her eyes were opened for the very first time. That's who we have raising kids, is that they just don't have a lot of exposure or knowledge about, you know, what's appropriate and why the things that had been said were so hurtful.
We should mention the incredibly heartbreaking story of Isabella Tishner. Izzy 10-year-old black girl on the autism spectrum took her own life as a result of bullying in the Davis County school system. Her mother says she reached out to school authorities at Izzy's elementary school there in Davis County, but as she said, she never saw any evidence of anyone doing anything substantive. That's a particularly tragic, I guess, element, that a part of the story, I suppose.
It is indeed. And of course, this fell outside of the Department of Justice's investigation. It happened after it was released. And I think that's just struck such a chord, not just in that school community, but really across the country. The Utah Jazz held a moment of silence. Mm. And there's just been a lot of discussion about this very tragic event.
So tell me what the Department of Justice, what kind of change they're imposing on the Davis School District. What are they asking the district to do?
Well, it's a pretty rigorous program they've put into place. First, they have to hire consultants to look at their harassment policies and procedures, look at their disciplinary practices, create trainings, monitor the district's progress, and then recommend additional experts or trainers to help the school district. The school district says it's going into this willingly, and they will participate. They're saying all the right things, but, you know, we shall see what happens. This is supposed to last about 5 years, this oversight in one fashion or another.
Marjorie, we should say that this particular moment is happening at a time like a unique, it seems like a uniquely conflicted moment politically in this country, where you have in school board meetings all over the country these disputes about the extent of racial sensitivity training in schools. You know, conservatives have made it a focal point in the culture war, saying that this kind of training, you know, overstates the problem, it distorts history. You have Utah lawmakers who have promised to take up the issue of so-called critical race theory in the upcoming legislative session. In May, they tried to get, you know, critical race theory onto the agenda of a special session. The governor refused, but they passed these resolutions opposing teaching the theory, even though it's not, of course, not taught in any public school outside of higher education or, you know, law classes. So are you imagining a kind of conflict now when you have federal authorities requiring a district to impose racial sensitivity and a pushback that's going on among, you know, conservative parents who've been quite outspoken in places around the state? Are you imagining this might be a moment of conflict coming?
I can clearly see that happening. And I worry most for the students. You know, I covered a meeting recently in Canyon School District where students from Jordan High School got up and were complaining that an ethnic studies class wouldn't be available this spring. And the district said there were concerns about the textbook and they felt hemmed in by the state school board rule that the state legislature called for and the resolutions that they passed when they were called themselves into session. And the thing that really struck me was one of the students said, you know, I need to know this. I need to know this to function as a college student, but I also need to know this just to function in a diverse high school. And so that class is not being reinstated, but the kids know they live in a diverse world and they need to understand it better. The superintendent of the Salt Lake School District, who is the first black superintendent we've ever had in the state of Utah, talked to me a little bit about when you tell kids they can't learn something or we're not going to teach it in school, they have their own toolkit. They'll just get on the internet and learn about it themselves. Mm-hmm. But then we lose the opportunity to have guided classrooms and instruction. So I maybe this will come to a head. I just find it sad that you know, what kids see on TV, these protests over the summer and this racial reckoning that was going on, that they don't have more of a knowledge base to operate from.
Marjorie Cortez, she's a reporter at the Deseret News. She covers education. We'll take a break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Hi, this is Noelle King from NPR. There's a lot to keep up with in the news, and one way you can help? Donate that vehicle you're not using anymore. It could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Thank you, and here's how to get started.
KUER accepts all kinds of vehicles, including SUVs, trucks, RVs, and even boats. Plus, the process is easy. We'll handle everything, from the free pickup to the donation receipt. You can get started at KUER.org/vehicle.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about a damning report released late last month from the Department of Justice about hundreds of incidents of racist behavior targeted particularly at Black and Asian American students in schools throughout the Davis School District. Not just cases of casual insensitivity. The report found that young people at these schools routinely called Black students the N-word and other epithets. They called these kids apes, said their skin was dirty. Department of Justice investigators said despite dozens and dozens of complaints, the district was deliberately indifferent to the hostile climate in their schools. Bryn Martindale is 18 years old. She's African-American, born in California. She was adopted by an all-white family in Bountiful. Bryn has grown up in the Davis district, and she told us it's not easy being a person of color there. If another African-American person were to come to you, they just had moved into Bountiful. You're going to go to Bountiful High. And they said, tell me what it's like.
The first thing I'd say is good luck. It's really difficult, and I would tell them to kind of just, like, fit in. It's a challenge to be kind of alone, if that makes sense. You get lots of racist remarks, and I don't know if they're coming from a point of hatred or just they might feel uncomfortable around you, so they want to make jokes so they feel more comfy. So yeah, another thing I would say is, like, get ready for racist remarks, for sure.
How do you respond to that? How does that make you feel?
I hate it, personally, but I have learned that just staying silent is just going to be the best thing for you to do. Just put up with it and move on. Sticks and stones. That's the attitude I've had to adopt. In fact, I kind of feel ashamed that I let stuff just roll off instead of standing up for myself, but that's just what you have to do. The most early incident that I can recall is in preschool. A boy, we'll call him Dave, told me that his dad doesn't like Black people, so he doesn't like Black people. I must have been 5 at the time in a church class. A boy telling me that because of my skin tone, I could never be smart, I wasn't educated. In elementary school, people would tell me that my hair was gross because I have different hair than white people. They didn't like that. People would tell me my skin is gross, dirty. Just last week, I was followed around a store. He followed me around until I looked at him. He obviously knew that I had noticed what he was doing. He's like, well, can I help you? And I was like, no, I'm fine. And I walked somewhere else and he continued to follow me. So I just ended up leaving the store. The N-word has been very, very prevalent in especially high school. It's an awful word. Me as a Black person, knowing the history behind it, would never say it as slang or as anything. It's a terrible word. People want to be Black, so they use
slang that Black people use. And I feel like even if some Black people understood the history behind that word, they wouldn't even say it either.
The report says there were repeated references to slavery and to lynching. Go pick cotton. You are my slave. How do you respond to stuff like that?
Unfortunately, if someone said that to me, I'd probably just laugh it off. And I see it in class today, not even towards Black people, towards other people of color, just like constant racist jokes. And all they have to do is laugh it off. They have to pretend like they're okay with that joke. And it's so sad to see just to sit there and have to deal with that all the time.
Because that's the thing you have to do to cope.
100%. You cannot speak out for your feelings in Bountiful, I feel like. You can never really stand up for yourself. Standing up for yourself loses friends. People think that they can't joke around you. They don't want to hang out with you because they think you're too serious when they just don't understand.
I wonder about what you're hearing now at school, now that this is, you know, it's become national news. Obviously, you're here talking to me about it.
Yeah.
You know, there's this big Department of Justice report. There are all these expectations now that the federal government is going to put on the district. They're going to have to change a lot of things, hire people, you know, change curriculum, all of those kinds of things. And I wonder how people are responding. Like, how are the kids responding to it? How are people talking to you about it right now that it's now broken into the news?
Right. Well, I think that people are avoiding me, kind of. Avoiding the subject because it's so uncomfortable. I've had people tell me that they thought it was stupid and that they've never had something racist happen to them. And, you know, they're white. So, I mean, they're not a minority in the school. For me, it's about time that someone has been called out. And the incident with Izzy Titchener is terrible. And she, at 10 years old, has felt like that is the only thing that was available to her was, you know, suicide. And it's about time because Izzy is not the only one. She is not the only 10-year-old in Bountiful or Foxborough that is going through this racist stuff. Her death did not need to happen, but we have needed a report, that something in Davis School District to get it out of here, because if it's not directly happening to white people, then they're never going to understand. They're too scared to understand. White people do not want to be educated because they don't want to feel guilty. Feeling guilty is step one. If you feel guilty, that means you feel remorse and empathy, and you're not going to want to be a person who was making racist remarks, right?
Do you think things will change?
I don't, it's hard to say. I feel like people are so defensive about it. They don't want to learn about it. They don't want to take steps forward to fix it because we're too prideful. America is great. It's awesome. But until we look at our flaws, we're never going to move forward. Things can't change unless we recognize our flaws.
How does your family feel? They're white. Clearly, they're gathered around you. They're defending you. I'm sure they're outraged by these stories. But what's the conversation like at home?
Well, I have a great family. My older sister and her brother-in-law are amazing. And my other older sister, they're both amazing. We have same-sex marriage within our family. We've had, like, teen pregnancy, so we're open to all of it. Like, we're not, like, a typical cutout family. I would say it is hard having an all-white family because I've gotten in arguments with my uncle over, like, the Confederate flag, and he thinks it's not racist, and it's just, like, back and forth. I know it's not coming from a place of hatred. It's coming from a place of ignorance. and uneducation. Because, I mean, if you're not black, you're never going to understand, like, 100% what that flag means, right? And if you have the Confederate flag today, it's just 100% a sign of racism. But I find that arguing with family members about with stuff like that, with especially political beliefs, it's just like an uphill battle. It's just, it's not a good use for time, in my opinion. I understand that we're never gonna see eye to eye on some stuff, and that's okay. I still love them, and I know that they love me. They're just uneducated, and lots of people in Davis County don't understand the movement of Black Lives Matter. If there's one thing I want to do today, I want everyone to understand that Black Lives Matter is not saying that Black lives are more important than any other life. That's not it, just plain and simple. Black Lives Matter is Black Lives Matter too. It's not putting us ahead of anyone. We're saying our lives are actively put at risk every day, and we need people to understand that we've started with doors closed. We need to stop, well, not we, white people need to stop being afraid of learning what Black Lives Matter is, because if you're afraid of it and you don't ever want to learn about it, we're never ever going to learn. We're never going to be better. And if we don't understand Black Lives Matter, we can never be better.
It's Brynn Martindale. She's a senior at Bountiful High School. We should mention that if you or someone you know is in crisis and needs immediate help, you can call the toll-free 24-hour hotline of the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. The number is 1-800-273-TALK, 1-800-273-8255. We'll take another break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
KUER's statewide service stays strong thanks to the listeners who also contribute to the station every month. Our nearly 9,000 sustaining members provide the most reliable source of income for the station, so we can bring you trustworthy news and information. If you value our commercial-free programming, consider becoming a KUER sustainer, with a recurring gift starting at just $5 a month, or increase your existing pledge. Just go to KUER.org/donate. And thanks for your support.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we've been talking about the findings from an investigation by the Department of Justice about widespread and persistent racism directed at Black and Asian American students in schools throughout the Davis School District. The department released a report late last month that said that many of these students they interviewed said they had experienced racial harassment every year since kindergarten. And despite hundreds of documented reports of complaints and expressions of concerns from parents and the students themselves, the report concluded the Davis District had been deliberately indifferent to that hostile climate. This week, we spoke with several parents of Black students in the Davis District. Two of them agreed to join us on the show. Steve Swenson is the father of four adopted Black children. Two of them attend Hannah Holbrook Elementary School in Bountiful. He and his wife also founded an advocacy group for students in the district. Daryl Stamp also joined us. He's a retired African-American educator, the parent of a student in the Davis school system. Daryl Stamp went first.
I was saddened by the report, infuriated, and not surprised at all, but definitely really sad that this continues to happen. Utah's not an outlier in this regard, and it certainly made me reflect on what the children of my friends and family, you know, may have to deal with who have school-age kids, as well as my own child. Just a surprise. You know, you would think we were past the Ruby Bridges days, but we're not. And it's just something that continues. And obviously, it's a black eye for Utah.
Do you feel the same way, Steve?
Absolutely. It is a black eye for Utah. And it's unfortunate. I don't think it's just isolated to Davis County, though. I think were the same type of investigation done in many school districts in Utah, the same conclusion might be reached. And I'd like to think that it's more ignorance than systemic racism. Hmm. But, you know, at the same time, the report validated a lot of things that we have experienced as well. Being the, you know, white parents to black children is a different experience than black parents to other black kids. But I know that for me, it made me sad to realize, wow, that it really is everything that we have experienced in a small way, and it's even bigger than what we've experienced.
Yes, I don't think we should be surprised at all. And I agree with you. I kind of equate ignorance with systemic racism in part. And yeah, we should not be surprised.
Well, let me ask this question, because I think this does come up. The idea of whether or not, Steve, you mentioned you'd like to think that it's more ignorance than it is something systemic. But how are you parsing the difference? Like, what is the difference between that? And I'll just mention that one of the parents that we spoke with this week talked about a story of his son, I think he's 16-year-old son, coming into a lunchroom at school, sitting down at the lunchroom. There in front of him was a stack of Post-it notes. And somebody had written on each and every one of that stack of Post-it notes the N-word. Now, that seems like an aggressive bit of racism. It came from a kid, maybe a group of kids. The parent, the father that I spoke with didn't know. But what's the difference between ignorance and that? That's an aggressive form of racism. How are you thinking about the difference between those? What do you make of that as a story? Because that isn't just someone saying some dopey thing, saying, oh, I like your hair or something like that. That is outright straight on racism. Steve, start with you.
Agreed. And that should not be tolerated. It's stunning that that could still happen in a school environment, the intimidation of another student using a racial slur like that. You know, how do you differentiate? Well, that's a very obvious difference. Mm-hmm. But I think where we have to go from here is to not just think, oh, well, that's racism, and I'm not racist. Mm-hmm. Even benign comments or things you might not realize are racist come across very differently. For example, my elementary age son, black, he is sitting waiting for his picture to be taken on school picture day and is told, hey, smile or you'll look like a gangster. And that means something completely different to him growing up in Flint, Michigan, than it might to the person who uttered it. And nonetheless, they didn't say to the next white kid, hey, make sure you smile, otherwise you'll look like a trailer park wife beater. You know, and I think you have to realize that even something said maybe ignorantly can have very significant racial overtones and blatant acts of racism, absolutely not tolerated. But let's take this to the next level and be inclusive rather than just accepting.
Daryl, what do you make of that story?
Well,
both stories.
It's hard, yeah.
Because we can hear you reacting there, and I want to give you a chance.
Sorry, I couldn't mute that.
No,
it's hard to keep it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we are who we say we are. This is America. This is who we are. We've been socialized to see differences in others. And this is who we've always been. And I mean, we're struggling now with having to make changes. But it's in every aspect of our lives. And unfortunately, those who are not of the majority have been typecast and stereotyped in a way that has crossed generations. And, you know, Black lives do matter. All lives matter, you bet. And in this instance, Black lives do matter because our children and our senior citizens, and regardless of gender and age, have been historically discriminated against. And I think we have to come to that realization that this is who we are. And how are we going to change this? Because basically self-reflection is painful. but we need to self-reflect, deal with that pain of who we are as a nation so that we can move forward. We've never wanted to deal with that. So our textbooks are whitewashed. Our teacher preparation programs are not, I mean, they're coming on board, but they don't deal with it, you know, anti-racist systems and how to be inclusive and teaching our students to be anti-biased and realize the positive features of diversity and inclusion.
I want to ask you about some of the particulars that came out in the report that may have been reflected in your own kids' experiences. And we should mention, Daryl, that your daughter hasn't had any of these negative experiences, at least not that she's been willing to share with you.
That's correct.
And we should use that as a caveat, but I'm wondering if she's seeing it, not expressing it in the same way. Like, what are you making of that? I guess that.
I think she's, we love her dearly. She's savvy enough and smart enough to navigate her way around those issues. She's heard her parents talk about these things, and she definitely internalizes those things, and she feels things deeply. And to protect her emotions, she does her best to navigate around those. I don't think that she avoids them, but she handles herself really well. We're proud of her for that. But we don't know. I mean, there's things she won't tell us, and we just won't probe into. And as far as kids, you know, I want to go back to that socialized behavior. I mean, these kids don't come out of the womb spouting the N-word and anything else that's related to that. Those are learned behaviors, and we are going through a moment in time where folks feel emboldened by whomever or whatever. But again, we've always been what we are, and now folks are emboldened to act on these things.
I want to push back on a little bit on something, Steve, you said just a moment ago, which is that it's not just Davis County. And I'm sure that it's not, but we have to note that the report from the Department of Justice did say that students who attended school in other districts told the Department of Justice that the harassment they experienced in Davis schools was worse by far. So what do you make of that? There's some reason to think that Davis is not entirely – of course it's not unique in that, but there was something really bad about it. Was there something about Davis County? And how are you processing that? You live there. Is it different?
I'd like to say no.
Yeah.
But, you know, every place struggles. What's unique about Davis County? I don't know.
Yeah.
But we need to fix it. And we'll start with Davis County. And I would hope that in time, Davis County can be a role model of a school district that has addressed its problem, acknowledged it head on, admitted that obviously we have a problem and we need to fix things, and becomes a model for other districts in the state.
Daryl, what do you think? Do you think Davis County is different?
Obviously, and in some ways, very much America. I keep coming back to that. I'm sure we canvassed other districts, states. It would be the same. It just so happens that this report has come out. Maybe there will be other reports of other districts and other states. But it is what it is. I mean, in places where there are homogenous groups, you don't have to deal with it. You don't get to experience this. Why would you want to? Which is an issue by itself. I mean, and so there's that safety net of being in that homogenous group. And if it's learned behavior and you see it in the news and it's subliminal and subtle in movies and television shows and advertisements and sporting events, it's a part of your DNA, and it shouldn't be, because your parents and your teachers should be able to teach you and lead by example. And obviously, that's not happening. It's not saying that all parents or some parents are bad, but, you know, it needs to become a part, of all of us to be inclusive and embrace diversity and embrace others.
The question is why? And you've already – all both of you have already sort of addressed elements here, like where does this come from? Let me throw a couple of ideas out there and have you sort of work through them with me. Is this a function or a feature of our political environment, which is, you know, culture war politics, a reaction from, you know, conservative elements to the Black Lives Matter movement or critical race theory or some of those, you know, culture war items? Is that a dimension? Is this just a feature of the place we're in right now in terms of partisanship? Daryl, you start there. What do you think? Do you think this is a feature of the moment we're in right now politically?
It's a feature of the moment we're in right now that has always been there bubbling beneath the surface.
Huh.
And the current last, 4, 6, 8 years, folks are emboldened. You know, they used to be able to keep this stuff to themselves and it was sort of in hushed circles. And, you know, if nobody knows, we don't have to deal with it. We don't have to suspend that teacher or fire that employee. And now the system is somewhat being held to account.
What do you think, Steve? You think that's part of it?
I would agree with that, that somehow that emboldening of bringing this conversation into the full daylight where it used to maybe just be said behind closed doors has been surprising. And I think this is obviously something that was already there and has now just been, I don't know, given permission that it's okay to talk about or okay to have a inflammatory approach towards someone else.
This behavior is coming from kids. But does it start with the parents?
Daryl's previously mentioned how we're all born with an innate sense of who we are. We feel most comfortable around those that are like us, you know, and how we extend ourselves outside of that comfort zone depends on the parents, I believe. And over time, your influencers shift from your parents to outside media. And that outside media has become so much more accessible in the last several decades and also filtered down to a much younger age too. And so how you help your children to appreciate diversity, to appreciate differences between your family, your social circle, and others around you, I think ultimately it does start at home. It starts with the parents.
Absolutely. And I think the social media aspect, for the most part, is positive, except for the pushback. You know, we just didn't believe that law enforcement would treat us differently until Rodney King was getting the crap beat out of him by 6 or 8 police officers. And somehow that's just dissipated and it's gone. And now we have more of that available for us to see. And I think the video and the social media stuff in one way helps us. And then the pushback then becomes very, very negative. But again, it's learned and it's supported. And, you know, how are we going to move forward? If Germany can get rid of their statues, if Belgium can get rid of the King Leopold statues, why can't we? And why can't we turn the corner? But we don't want to because we've never had to.
I'm thinking about the demographics of Davis County. Do you think the kids, most of the kids that said these things, did these things, these racist things, were LDS? Steve?
Perhaps. I don't know.
Do you think that's a relevant question?
Sure. I think it's a relevant question. We live in a state that is predominantly filled with members of the Church of Jesus Christ. And, you know, to that point, I was impressed that just last week, the Church of Jesus Christ sent out an email to be inclusive, not just accepting. That is the message.
But someone's, it doesn't seem like someone's getting the message. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's fair to say, or it's a fair presumption to suggest that a majority of the kids who did this were Latter-day Saints. So why? what it, and again, maybe it's not relevant. Maybe it's just a function of it's a county and a state that's very white, and that the function of their religion to religious tradition is irrelevant to it. But it is a fact that they come from a faith tradition, or probably do. I think it's fair to say that. And so how do you explain that? Yes, you're hearing reactions from the church now. And yes, you hear from the pulpit messages of inclusivity and racial sensitivity and those kinds of things. But then you have young people who are of that particular faith tradition who are writing the N-word on a stack of post-it notes. So as a member of that faith tradition yourself, how do you react to that, Steve?
I am appalled.
Yeah.
And that is abhorrent behavior. That does not fit within any tenet of the Church of Jesus Christ, that all children are children of God. And I would expand this. I think this goes far beyond just a Church of Jesus Christ kind of issue. Yes, we're here in Utah where we are the predominant religion, but in other states, that's certainly not the case. And yet they have these problems there as well. And so if we just back this out to maybe it's a Christianity issue. Let's back it out even further. What about all the religions of the world? That golden rule, do unto others as you'd like have done unto you. That should be the tenet that we as the human race all live by. But back to your question, if there are members of the church to which I belong doing this, that is not acceptable. And it does not follow the teachings that I know that the church would espouse.
I think you got to do more than the talk, and even more than walk the walk that goes with the talk, not going being very Seussian. You have to lead by example. I just think whatever the religion is, there's more than donating to the food bank and sending shoes to Africa, and you need to make a conscious effort to make your faith noticeable and recognizable.
What do you think comes next? Utah lawmakers are promising to take up this issue of critical race theory. Steve, you sort of alluded to this potential conflict that might be coming right now at a time when the Department of Justice is imposing certain requirements on a school district in Utah. You're getting this pushback from others who believe that racial sensitivity training is overreach, it's overdone, it's distorting history, all of those kinds of things. So are you bracing yourself for a conflict? Because at a time when people are looking for change, there's this movement right now that's resisting it completely.
Yeah, that's right. And, Daryl put it very succinctly, that movement has been emboldened to...
It's always been there. It's just now emboldened.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. That's right. And, the state school board already adopted some rules in June. Yeah. And, I really liked what John Arthur, teacher at Meadowlark Elementary in Salt Lake, Utah's 2021 Teacher of the Year. And he said, there's nothing wrong with learning. There's nothing wrong with studying history and understanding what has happened in the past. And he said somehow people have found a way to spoil words like equality and diversity, inclusion. And it's up to us, reasonable people, to recognize that cannot stand. And I think unless we take this down to the parent level, nothing will happen. Nothing will change. And instead, it will become that politicized fight. And this should not be a politicized battle. This should be a rescue call to support our students and recognize that there are so many out there who are being marginalized.
I can't tell if you are optimistic that there will be change or pessimistic because all these conflicts are emerging. And I want to hear you both on this. How are you feeling right now? There's a report. Now it's sort of out in the open. It was always there, at least has been for a while, but at least someone's talking about it now. We're having conversations like this. Is this a good thing? Or do you also feel like it's just the start of who knows? I mean, Daryl, you start with that question.
Well, related to curriculum, the curriculum is already slanted and whitewashed to the point where we have to have Hispanic American Month, Native American Month, which is going on right now, Black History Month, because all of us are not included. There are great educators out there that are trying to navigate Utah, whatever, California, Texas, Massachusetts standards so that we can include others and the relevance and their contributions to this great nation. So people are pushing back against facts. That needs to change. And people, again, just don't want to deal with that. It's painful. Self-reflection is painful. I guess they say that in AA and NA and CA, you know, the first step is recognizing things. It seems like we don't, at least now, want to recognize that. But we're going to have to, or we're going to keep having the reports that we've had for centuries.
It's Daryl Stamp. He's a retired educator, parent of a student in the Davis School District. Along with Steven Swenson, he's the father of four black children, two of whom currently attend Hannah Holbrook Elementary in Bountiful. We should also mention that if you or someone you know is in crisis and needs immediate help, you can call the toll-free 24-hour hotline of the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. The number is 1-800-273-8255. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter at Radio West. Our intern is Stu Nolan, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard, Tim Slover, and Carrie Watson. I'm Doug Fabrizio.